Ulf Kuhn will tell us about Lie algebras associated to multiple Q zeta values. Oh, read there.
Okay, so thank you for the invitation. And so this is the first talk with slides, and usually with slides it is too much and you forget a lot. And so I explain you the structure. So the third part will be the Lie algebras. The second part will be the associated. The fifth part will be the multiple zeta values, and the zeros will be the motivation, which will be this multiple zeta values. So 3, 2, 1, and now we start. So multiple zeta values are real numbers that you obtain by generalizing the special values of the Riemann zeta function, and for this you sum over powers of integers in a nested way, so you sum up in a cone. And so if you multiply two of these numbers, then you can see, just using this expression as being a nested sum, that you can write the product again as a linear combination of nested sums, and this gives you a recipe to describe the product of multiple zeta values. And actually the weight, which is the sum of these indices, will be homogeneous in this description of the product, but the depth will not be additive. And there's another way to express these multiple zeta values by means of iterated intervals. And also there's a recipe to multiply iterated intervals. And this gives you another way to express the product of these multiple zeta values. And now you're just multiplying real numbers, and you have two recipes, but you have different representatives. And this gives you relations, and one of the most easy relations is just the one we have here. So we have these two real numbers, and we multiply one by with the shuffle product. This gives you this expression, and if we multiply with the Stafford product, this gives you that expression, and these have to be the same, and therefore we get a linear relation for these numbers. And actually, one has found that there are more relations, and you get them by formally introducing a zeta of 1 and taking care that you have to do something in order to avoid the divergences, but then you get more relations, so-called extended double shuffled relations. And the people have played a lot with these numbers. In particular, it started with the work of David Brodhaus and Dirk Kreimer, when they realized these numbers occur by calculating the so-called Feynman diagrams. And by the time, also other people like Ekal or Sahir also found interest in these numbers. And then they figured out that these algebra has some nice structure, namely if you sum over the graded pieces with respect to the weight and the depth, then this can be expressed as a quotient of power series, and these power series are kind of easy structure. So one is quite easy, so it's just the even powers. So this corresponds somehow to the even single zeta values. Then you have the odd powers, which somehow count the number of odd single multiple zeta values. And there will be some correction term, and this correction term, they found that this corresponds to period polynomials, or as period polynomials correspond to cusp forms. So this is essentially the dimension of the space of cusp form for SL2Z. and the people were quite amazed that multiple zeta values and modular forms for SL2Z seemed to have some connection, and this was something that the people amazed a lot. And for the purpose of this conference, we see this is the Hilbert-Poincaré series of some polynomial ring, whereas this is the Hilbert-Poincaré series of the universal enveloping algebra of some Lie algebra, which has some generators and some relations. Okay. And if you think this formula is too complicated, then you just set y equals to 1, and then by miracle, this dimension formula now only counts the weight graded dimensions, and then you just get this tiny rational function, and the point is now if you view this as on the point of view of Lie algebras, this corresponds to the to a Lie algebra which has two generators, one in depth 2 and one in weight 2 and one in weight 3. And actually you see somehow this Lie algebra as being kind of mirrored in Brown's theorem, which is saying that the multiple zeta values which only have 2s and 3s as the entries give you a spanning set for all these multiple zeta values. And now you see the 2 and the 3s, you can see them just as being words in 2 and 3, and then you see that the words in 2 and 3 are just the elements of the universal enveloping algebra of an Lie algebra is having only 2s and 3, a generator called 2 and a generator called 3. Okay. And you see that this is the maximal possible dimension you can get for this multiple zeta value. So the point is you cannot prove that is the maximal dimension, because then you would have to solve deep problems in transcendence theory which are far from being known for these real numbers. Okay. So this is what we know about multiple zeta values, and now we just want to put it even more into the framework of this conference. So we have Zakier's conjecture, and this will be related to the so-called double shuffle Lie algebra we have seen here before, and the double shuffle Lie algebra is somehow locked in between two of these Lie groups that play a role here. Since on the one hand side here is called the Teichmuller Lie algebra, and to the right you have the Kashiwara-Wern Lie algebra. Okay, so we have the double shuffle Lie algebra. This corresponds to these weight graded dimensions, and you have a linearized double shuffle Lie algebra, which corresponds to the Brotos-Kreimer conjecture, and somehow you could view this arrow as a kind of expansion of what Bohr was saying. So somehow this is the weight graded. Well, it's a depth graded version of this thing here. Okay, and now if you don't understand something, you try to grab in the basket of algebra. And now what the people are doing here is just like you don't understand these real numbers and you have transcendence problems and so on. So you just reformulate your problem algebraically, saying, okay, we just have formal symbols, and the formal symbols should just satisfy the list of relations we know for the real numbers. And by doing so, you define the algebra of formal multiple zeta values, and a deep result by Racine And Ekal is that these formal multiple zeta values can be seen as the Q algebra by the zeta formal of 2, which is a polynomial ring in just one simple zeta formal of 2, and the graded dual of the universal enveloping algebra of this double shuffle Lie algebra. So somehow this is a very nice result, in particular using this Cartier-Milner-Moore theorem. You can immediately deduce that this formal multiple zeta value, for example, is a free polynomial algebra. Okay. And so this is what is done. But now you could go further. Now you know this conjecture by Ihara. So the people expect that this double shuffle Lie algebra is a free Lie algebra with one generator in each odd degree, k bigger than equal than 3. And the corollary is, if Ihara's conjecture is true, then the formal multiple zeta values satisfy Zaki's conjecture. And we have this isomorphism on the level of algebras. And now we just write down this Hilbert-Poincaré series. We know the tensor product of algebra multiplies Hilbert-Poincaré series. And now we just multiply this, and then we really see by elementary algebra that 1 over 1 minus x squared, which is the Hilbert-Poincaré series of this polynomial ring with one generators in weight 2, and then this universal enveloping algebra has these odd generators starting with 3. You multiply these and you see the terms are cancelling, and so only these two are remaining, and these are exactly the ones that were predicted in Zaki's conjecture. And so we see that these formal multiple zeta values do satisfy what we expect from the honest multiple zeta values, and the main conjecture is, of course, that the algebraic model of multiple zeta values actually are isomorphic to the multiple zeta values. Okay, so this is the story for multiple zeta values, and now we want to go further, and this is just in the spirit of parts of number theory. Whenever you have some identity for integers, you try to see whether you can prove this for the so-called Q integers. And
so, part of what theory? You gave a name and I didn't catch it.
Number theory?
Oh, number theory, sorry, okay. No, I just didn't hear.
Yeah, for example, Gauss was playing with the Q binomial coefficients, and in doing this, he introduced this so-called Gauss Q integers, so which is just you replace n by 1 plus Q plus Q to the n minus 1, and then if you let Q goes to 1, you recover n, and the nice feature is that this is just the quotient of these two things. And now you replace in the definition of multiple zeta values all the n's by this Q integer n. You do this and then you realize, oh, there's a slight problem, because now you have something that looks like a Q series, but it never converges at any point, and therefore you have to enforce conversions at some value of Q, and we enforce that this series is indeed a power series in Q by enforcing that we just put some polynomials in the numerator, and we just want that the first polynomial is vanishing in zero, which has the effect that this is a power series which has some point of convergence. And therefore, it makes sense to speak of this as a formal power series. And the others are quite general. And also, you see, in all these, you have the same denominator, which is not really depending on L. You see, you all have the same, and therefore, we just neglected it. But the point is now, if we want to make the limit for Q goes to 1, to get back the multiple zeta values, we just have to multiply the appropriate factor. So we have this double quotient, and therefore it has to be in the front. But in order to make algebraic manipulation, it's better to forget this in the formula, and then you come back to it. And then you see you have some freedom here.
So that's a nice construction, but it kind of looks quite arbitrary. Ordinary multiple zeta values, they were related to the Kz equation. Is it related to the QKz equation or to something conceptually interesting?
I don't know. Only what I can hope to convince you after the talk, mm-hmm. that these objects have a very deep, very nice internal mm-hmm. structure. Mm-hmm. And for me, it's not clear how to relate them to geometry, whether there's a QKzb or whether there's other geometric operations behind.
So no relation to difference equations, because QKz is some kind of difference equation. So
I have no idea. But maybe we could discuss on this. And the idea was that we should present what we are working on and initiate questions and so on. So this is, thank you. Okay, so we have these objects, and so the first remark is, of course, this is a very general definition and so on, and the generality has one advantage, and the biggest advantage is that it is almost automatically clear that you get a Q algebra. So you have these. You multiply these, and then you see just the usual Stafford rule is slightly changed, so you have to change the polynomial here by multiplication. And so it's very simple. So you really get for free that if you take the vector space spanned by all these multiple Q zeta values, it's an algebra, and actually to get a little bit more structure, want the degree of the polynomial not too big, but we see we get an algebra, but the price we have to pay, the notion of weight is a priori not clear, and the notion of depth is not clear in this definition either. Okay, this is a very general algebra, but now you see you have lots of subalgebras by having certain filtration. For example, the filtrations put on the degree of these arbitrary polynomials. This gives you a filtration, and also you could impose the condition that these polynomials all do vanish in zero. So this will be another constraint. And now you can intersect these spaces, and the key observation is that all these subspaces are subalgebras of these general multiple Q-zeta values. And moreover, if you look closely to all previous known definitions except one, where we don't know it, it will be all being just isomorphic to one of these subspaces. So it's like there have been different concepts with a different purpose of multiple Q-zeta values, but they all are of this kind. And so this is a kind of very nice definition. And actually, there are QCs that led us to this definition, and these QCs a priori are even more general, because now we are allowing, in addition to the polynomials in the numerator, we allow also that the summation indices come up with some power. So these are even more general QCs, where now you have this summation index in here. Okay, and also for some technical reasons we have to scale it so that the formula for multiplication will become more stable. And now we give more freedom here, but we take freedom here because we are requiring that these polynomials are the so-called Eulerian polynomials, which are defined by this equation. So somehow they are the rational, they determine the rational function which you get by the negative polylogarithm, or another way, this gives you these powers. Our things. And now these Eulerian polynomials, you satisfy lots of relations and so on, and you can write them down. And you see it is in 0 and P1, they are in T, and then the P2, P3 and so on are given by this, and now you have these Q series, and you see that they are just Q series. Okay. And let's say something. Maybe one remark at this point. So what we are doing here is somehow a Q average of this negative polylogarithm. If we make a Q average of the positive polylogarithms, we would get this elliptic multiple Qs setup. But we would get this elliptic multiple setup values. So somehow these objects we are considering here are not the elliptic multiple setup values we've seen also a little bit in this conference. I think in Lena's talk, you did a little bit elliptic MCP. And so these are not the elliptic MCPs. But these B brackets become more understandable if we write the coefficients more in the spirit of number theory, because the coefficients are given by generalizations of the so-called divisor sums. So you have the integer n, you decompose n into products, and now you take parts of these products and then to put these to the power. And I explained this formula for the special case where these r's are 0. And if they are not 0, you have the u1 to the r1, v1 to the s1, and so on. Okay, so you have these generalized multiple, you have these multiple divisor sums. And in particular, if you just go to the depth 1 case, you come back to the well-known divisor function, and now, as our algebra contains the constants, we recover the Fourier expansions of the classical quasi-modular forms as being part of our algebra. So we have an algebra which contains all the modular forms for SL to Z and all its derivatives. Okay. So we have this object, and now using these brackets, we can even describe the subspaces. For example, the subspace where all the polynomials do vanish in 0 is just given by the brackets. And again, a remark at this point is we have no restriction that these SIs have to satisfy something like S1 has to be bigger or equal than 2, because we are working with Q series and we don't have the convergence issues to have this multiple set of values. So you really have all these indices and you get this. And if we have, for example, this filtration step 1, then these are the brackets where the SIs are all bigger or equal than 2. And for example, this is exactly the set of multiple set of values considered by Okunkov. And he conjectures that these are somehow the counting function for certain Kolmogorov invariants on the Hilbert scheme of points of on a surface. And so there is some geometry, but it's rather vague at this point. Okay, so you have this, and also with the B brackets, we can come back to the multiple zeta values, and so the additional indices R's, they just shift the multiple zeta value, because we have the ni to the R in the top, and then we have the ni to the si downstairs, and then we have just this si minus R. And so we actually came to this nice Q-series by studying Fourier expansion of so-called multiple eigenstates, where also a lot can be said, but not today. Okay, so we have these multiple Q zeta values, and the theorem we have is that these multiple Q zeta values are spanned by the B brackets. So a priori these B brackets look more general, but this is only a matter of looking on it in a not perfect way, because for example if we have some N2 here, then we not write this N2 as 1 plus N2 minus 1, and we get this 1 by just having this term here. So this is a polynomial 1 minus t, and this will be divided by this thing, and you see this will cancel, and so this gives you just the 1, and you sum now the N3 between 0 and N2, so this gives you just an N2 minus 1, and here we have just 1 here, and so we really came back again. So you see that these additional powers of the summation indices do not really matter, and now if you do the combinatorics of this little trick, then you can prove the theorem. Okay, but the advantage is for the B brackets we have a nice defined notion of depth, namely the number of indices, and we have a nice notion of weight, which is just the sum of these indices. And so now we have two filtrations on this space of multiple Q zeta values, and now the point is you can start making experiments, and actually it is quite interesting to program this Q series and then to let your programs run, and then it gives you some indication how this should look like, and the first observation is the algebra of multiple Q zeta values should be isomorphic to a free polynomial algebra. Then every B bracket equals a linear combination of brackets. So this means this virtual extension from to these B brackets is not needed, and even more, every B bracket should be a linear combination of brackets which contains only 1, 2, 3s. And so you see the Lie algebra on 3 generators. And you also see the Lie algebra on 3 generators in the dimension formula, because here you have these 3 generators, weight 1, weight 2, weight 3. And then you have some relations. And then there's nothing. But actually the experiments say there's not nothing, but there's canceling of higher homology. So you see, Hilbert Poincaré series has lots of terms, and then if you have higher homology, then they may cancel, and in fact you see some cancellation of higher homology. But you see, it's a nice formula, and somehow you see the 1, 2, 3 also reflected in this dimension formula. And now we have to take a deep breath, because the analog of the Porter-Skrymer conjecture is little bit more complicated. So let's start with the easy part. So the easy part is that the role of zeta of 2 in is now played by the quasi-modular forms. So the Hilbert-Poincaré series of the quasi-modular forms, just for the wave, it is clear, it's 1 over 1 minus x2, 1 minus x4, 1 minus x6. You know, the quasi-modular forms are generated by e2, e4, and e6. But now we have this additional additional filtration by the depths, and then you use a not so easy theorem by Zagier, which is saying that the space of modular forms is spanned by products of Eisenstein series, of just two Eisenstein series, and this is some consequence of Rankine-Selbert methods, and we use period polynomials and so on. So it's, but anyhow, you use this and you see this factor here. And the next is now this Lie algebra looking thing is now having generators starting in 1, 3, 5, and so on. But in addition, it has some operator like a derivation that is making more and more and more. And so they come with increasing degree 2. Now the relation again come with something that has to do with modular forms, but now with the square of the dimension of the space of modular forms. Then there will be something in depth 3 and 5. We will see later what this means. And also there will be additional generators coming now with the number of cusp forms to the sphere. Okay, so this is just observation. So you have these tables where we have calculated lots of these filter dimensions. Then we go to the associated gradient, and then we look and see what is fitting to this. And then we see that we have about 100 dimensions where they fit, but even if you go to smaller depths, you can prove something. And now it is quite astonishing that you have less information in order to fit all the data plots you have. And actually for small wave, namely for wave less than 7, we can even prove parts of these conjectures by giving upper and lower bounds, and then everything works fine. Okay, so we have these conjectures, and let's rephrase this more in the spirit of the conference. So we expect that this algebra of multiple Q zeta value can be seen as a tensor product of the ring of quasi-modular forms and graded dual of the universal enveloping algebra coming from a B-filter B algebra. And we will see now in a minute what these Lie algebras could be. And so what we should remember is something like we have a weight gradient dimension conjecture for this multiple Q zeta values. This corresponds to some partition shuffle Lie algebra. We have this refinement in the weight and depth gradient dimension. This should correspond to the linearized partition shuffle Lie algebra. And okay. Yeah. Okay, now we have done 0 and 1. So we know the objects. So we can say a lot more on these objects, but I gave you just some information on these objects, and so it should have been around a third of the talk, which is okay. So we have now objects, we have some experiments, we have some formulas, and now we want to see whether these formulas make sense or not. And now we come associated to, and the machinery to see these Lie algebras is at the moment for me the theory of Eckhart smooth, and because I don't have any geometric machinery like the theory of motifs and so on that do the job for multiple set of values. And even if you look very closely, it's like the proof of Racine is also just brute force. It's something that's like it falls down because by calculation. Okay, so now we want to study moods. We have already seen moods, and the difficulty with the moods is that this is a kind of developing theory, and Eckhart is a kind of strong person with a strong personality, and the students of him don't want to change any wordings of him. And so it is not so that it is accessible like an algebra textbook with a nice definition. You go like this. And so there are parts which remain a little bit vague. And so there's a student of him, Cresson, and he started to write a little introduction. But it seems that Eckhart was not so happy with it, but at least I personally just thought it was not too bad. Okay, so his definition of a mood is the following. So you have an alphabet, and with an alphabet you have the words, and then a mood is a map from the words to the ring. And having this, there you get a bijection between moods and non-commutative power series, namely the coefficient of the power series is nothing else than the map described by this mood. And so somehow you should think of this, but now the point is you have two ways to work this. You have on the one hand you have the alphabet, you can do manipulation, on the other hand you have the ring and you can do manipulation. And to see the example, what we were interested in most, it's like we have some alphabet and our ring will be just the ring of power series in some variables, and now the mode will be just a sequence of elements in this ring, namely the first should depend only on the const, should be a constant, and then the else component of this sequence should be a power series in just the first L variables in this ring. And now we can view this sequence as a mode. Namely, if we have a word, AA1, AA2, up to AIL, then we apply to this the evaluation of FL, now on the coordinates UI1, UI2, up to UIL. And somehow we could view this also as a sequence of functions in a variable number of variables. Okay, so this is an example, and the most of these properties of moods are functional equations and with many terms. So if you have a functional equation which is an equality, then it's just handled by group theory, but if you have a functional equation with three terms, then we get problems. And with moods, you have functional equations with many, many terms, but they are still satisfy some recurrence or something like this. And the most fundamental one is in this sense the so-called alternal relation, which is just you sum over all permutations of the indices. And you want this sum over permutation to be zero. And in order to express this now in this vocabulary, you write this as being a kind of shuffle alphabet, and then you will see that if all these shuffles are zero, which is equivalent at the sum over all permutations of the variables are zero. So this is one symmetry. The other symmetry you get is now, if you consider maps to a slightly more complicated thing, namely you just want the variables to come in pairs. So you have a U1, V1, U2, V2, U3, U3, V3. And now you want also again a sequence of elements in this power series, which depends now on these two L variables, which actually come in pairs. So it just depends on L pairs of variables. And then you can now act on the ring side. So before we had some manipulations on the words, and now we have manipulations on the ring side, and then we have the so-called swap, means that we interchange these variables. I'm sorry, you don't see. So you interchange these variables, and so this gives you another manipulations on these functions. And another symmetry is so-called alternil. Alternil can also be formulated in terms of these recurrence definitions you have in the combinatorics of words. But essentially, it's something like you sum over the interchange of the permutation of these indices, and then you take some differences and then you divide by the element in this thing. Okay. Okay. So you have these manipulations, which are quite thing. And the next one is that using this kind of manipulations, now you can define a Lie algebra structure on these polynomials or on this power series. Okay, so this is again a quite of long formula, and therefore I'd like to show you just an example. So if we have bimoles concentrated in depth 1, so this means just some function or some polynomial depending on two variables. And now if you want to make the Lie brackets out of it, then we first make the alternating product of these, which is the thing here. And then we do this manipulation of variables to get the Lie product of these two. So, okay. And now, the result is that the set of bimoles equipped with this Lie bracket is a Lie algebra. And in particular, if the mole is taking values in the ring of polynomials, which are alternal and swap invariant, and it should be of even degree in depth 1, this is a subalgebra. And moreover, in this Lie algebra, we do have a derivation. And moreover, in this Lie algebra, we have a nice subalgebra, namely those which don't have any mixed terms in the UI. And okay. And so what Laila and I am doing now is to consider the space of polynomial moles which are alternate, swap invariant, and even in degree 1. And we hope to prove that we can find a Lie bracket on this space. And what we can actually prove, what we did yesterday, what Leila did, most part of it, that the image of these Al-Il polynomials via the natural map is a subalgebra of this space. Okay, so now we have this, and now we have rules, and now you can awake again, because now you see somehow what we did so far. So we have multiple zeta values, and with the multiple zeta values, we have the double shuffle Lie algebra and the linearized shuffle, double shuffle Lie algebra. The double shuffle Lie algebra is isomorphic to this Ari Al-Il with values in the polynomials. So we had just seen another description of this double shuffle Lie algebra in a combinatorial way in Eckhart's language. So we just had the reformulation of the algebra you've seen here before. And also the linearized one can be seen in this language here. So somehow we've seen a reformulation of things you have seen before in a kind of new language on this side. And then we have seen that there are these multiple Q zeta values which have natural maps by specialization of this Q goes to 1 to multiple zeta values. We will see in the next slides that there are Lie algebras which corresponds to these multiple Q zeta values which now sit in this space of these B-mules which are alternil and swap invariant or which are polynomial alternal and swap invariant. So we have now a recipe to associate to the multiple Q zeta values Lie algebras which have proven or conjecturally injective maps from this double shuffle Lie algebra or the other one. So we have these Lie algebras which you might not consider so interesting, but these are conjecturally isomorphic to the Lie algebras you are really interested in. And we have a natural extension of these Lie algebras. And the extension is somehow given by having a derivation in this bigger space, and then somehow this derivation is making you the space bigger and bigger and bigger by just applying this derivation. So you have something that, at least I think, that should have some geometric meaning, but I don't know what it is. And so you have these Lie algebras here and here, and now the last half an hour I would like to, or in 20 minutes, I'd like to explain how to get these, and moreover that the dimensions we can calculate by experiment out of these are exactly the dimensions we are expecting from these Q series. Okay, so somehow we make this intermediate step to get a framework where we can find Lie algebras which should give the right dimensions. Okay, and in order to get to these Lie algebras, we now have to find polynomials that somehow relate to these multiple Q zeta values, and we use the B brackets, and the big advantage of these B brackets is that they are dimorphic, so they also have two ways to describe the product. And the point is, if you have this kind of symmetry, you could see them either on the level of objects, or you could see the symmetry on the level of generating series. And for example, if your objects are alternal, then the generating series should be group-like, and so on. And so what we are considering now is the generating series. So somehow, in your language, this is a polynomial image of the associator. So you have a kind of word series where you have the word tensored its dual, and now you apply to the word the map giving you this multiple zeta values, and to the dual word you associate isomorphically to a polynomial. This is what you do in the case of multiple zeta values, and in the case of B brackets you also have some alphabet, and then you do the same. So somehow you have this generating series which can be seen in your picture, something like this. So you have this generating series, and in this case the generating series can be expressed just in a closed formula, which is rather helpful in proving the identities we have. Namely, if we multiply this generating series, we get again a complicated combination of the generating series, which is in the simple case something like, or in the simplest case, is given by this. So you see the shuffling of the of these polynomial variables. Then you see this alternating. So the point is now, you see, a priori this could be having a pole, but now if you set x1 to x2 in here, then you see that this has to vanish. So therefore, this is again a power series in xi, and x1, x2, and y1, y2. And here we get some additional terms, and here we see some Bernoulli numbers, and so somehow you get a framework about the multiplication of these B brackets. And again, the story is, if you really want to see a formula how to multiply two B brackets, you could take the coefficients corresponding to the B bracket of steps 1 with steps 1 in here on this side, and now you have to collect the same coefficient here, and then you see the formula how to multiply two B brackets. And another symmetry is the so-called Cartesian relation. It corresponds to the fact that these B brackets were somehow made out of a partition of N. So it was the sum of the ui vi, and you can write this ui vi in a Young tableau, and you can swap this Young tableau just turning around, then you get another partition of N, and somehow this gives you this symmetry which is called partition relation. And we were so happy that we realized that this is exactly the same formula as occurred in the theory of Eccal, and so we were trying to say, oh, this Eccal theory might be interesting for us, and so we started to look at it. And so we have these symmetries, and so the swap is even becoming more complicated. You can write down the formulas, but they get easily too messy and you don't see anything. So you have these generating series, and now you can use this partition relation in order to alter the multiplication. And if you do so, then you can actually lift the shuffle or the shuffle product of multiple zeta values. So if you consider this shifted product, so you have an involution, but this involution is defined on the level of representatives, so it gives you just another way to express the product. And if you see this in the case of the brackets, which specialize to multiple zeta values, you see really that are the lift of the shuffle product and the shuffle product. So you really have lifts of these two product structures, and the formulas get messy, and the idea is that, again, you get all the relations. Okay, now we have this, but now what does it help us? So we have this partition, we have this generating series, and now the generating series has two parts, and one part is just living in your algebra. And so now we can apply maps on the algebra side. Namely, we could mod out all the products, we could mod out lower depth terms, lower weight terms, and so on. And then we have a resorting of our power series. And in particular, if you just look at the generators of the algebra, then some reduce to the same generator or some linear combination. So we get a sequence of polynomials which are now indexed by representatives of our algebra modulo products or and lower depths modulo products and lower depths, lower weight, and also we want to throw out quasi-modular forms. So we get sequence of polynomials, and moreover, these polynomials now have the property that, of course, they do have to satisfy these functional equations here and here. And now, because we are eliminating the product, we are eliminating this, and so just the sum over the shuffles has to be zero. And here, this means we have the swap invariant, and so we get. For example, this a sequence of polynomials satisfying these properties we have seen before in this Eckhardt formalism. And now we say, okay, we define our Lie algebra as just as being the sub-Lie algebra of this bigger space, but now generated by all these elements that come by this construction from this multiple-set of values. Then we take the generating series, cut out the quasi-modular forms, we cut out the products, and we cut out the lower weight. And then you get a set of equations, and then you can solve the equations, and then, for example, you see these elements, and for example, in depth one, you can really see somehow how they do correspond to each other. So we see this corresponding, and now we have something we could plug into the computer, and now we could start playing with these things. And now the point is that it seems to be the case that this is generated just by the guys coming from the depth one element somehow, and we see that there's some typo, but if we now make the generating series, then we see something that is coming with the with all these odd elements. Then we have this kind of derivation playing a role, and then we have relations, but now the relations come with a set of odd period polynomials, which is twice the dimension of cusp forms plus one, was coming from the Eisenstein series. And then the interpretation of this is, if this is really the case, then if we could define a kind of formal multiple Q set of values as arcinated, and if we could show that the homomorphisms of this formal Q multiple setters are a torso of this extension of this DMR0, which is somehow the Grothendieck-Teichmüller group extended in a suitable way, which should be a co-unipotent group and which is then isomorphic to its Lie algebra, then we could prove this kind of weight conjecture. Namely, we see that this formula here can again be seen as we've seen in this formal proof with Ihara's conjecture. So this is a kind of analog of Ihara's conjecture, that we really get these correction terms here. If we just multiply the weight graded formula for quasi-modular forms, and here we have the formula for this universal enveloping algebra of this Lie algebra, and then we see this gives this formula. And I think even if you just say, okay, these are formulas, and it's remarkable, it's like, what in hell do these dimensions of modular forms play a role with here? Is that something like a formula like this is not something that comes with random, so it seems to have some structure. So this is somehow the analog of Tsakye's conjecture and an analog of Ihara's conjecture. This would give you something which is conjectured for the weight for this multiple Q zeta values, and moreover, if you do the same for the linearized partition shuffle Lie algebra, you get this by taking the polynomials modulo the generating series modulo the quasi-modular forms products and the lower depth terms, then in there you have these elements corresponding to the depth 1 brackets, and moreover you have a map from the partition shuffle Lie algebra to the linearized shuffle Lie algebra, in the sense whenever you have such a sequence of polynomials, then the first non-vanishing term should be is something that lives in this linearized world, and for this you get, for example, if you take this classical Ihara-Takao relation, you get some new generator which is now living in this linearized world, and so you get more by this kind of relation. And so these kind of relations we had seen that some of them are real relations in the sense that it really gives you something zero, which is something you don't see in the multiple zeta world, because in the multiple zeta world you don't have element one, but here you have something that corresponds to the one, and so you have some relations that are really relations and some they are not. But now this kind of much too complicated formula really starts to get structure. So we really have these generators which we now can really write down in our Lie algebra, and actually we know what the D is. Namely, the D is just this this derivation. So we had this derivation of Bari was just by multiplying with ui, the sum ui vi, which in depth 1 is just multiplying by ui vi. So we really see that if we multiply our, if we take the derivatives of our generators, we really get this number of generators as expected. Then again, we get these relations here, which corresponds to period polynomials, or more precisely to tensor products of period polynomials. And again, once we have a relation, we can apply this derivation in this Bari Eckel Lie algebra. We get a new relation. Then we have some homology, because the relations do have relations. And then we get these new generators, as I explained, by coming from this partition shuffle Lie algebra as being the first term. And then we have that something which was not existing in the multiple zeta world should be orthogonal to the image that comes from the multiple zeta world. And so this is that the old, the image of the generators coming from multiple zetas are orthogonal to the one in this new algebra. And so it really gives a nice interpretation of all these five terms and these power series. And in fact, having now this description as being an algebra of polynomials and so on, you could really put it in the computer. And Pari is very nice because you can put a lot of work into parallel processing, and then you could really test it. and you can test it much, much better to much higher degrees than calculating Q series. It's like for the Q series, you have you cannot really go further than 10,000 coefficients, which is it's 5,000 coefficients. And then we have to calculate the rank of the 5,000 by 5,000 matrix, which is very full and so on. Anyhow, you can do this, and so you could really do this. And also you could take this conjectured product in this Lie algebra, and it turns out it has the properties as you like, at least in the experiment. You could calculate all this dimension of these extra guys. And so I did this last year, and maybe the computers are bigger now, but I think running a computer with 120 cores, and you see all these cores are running, and also the RAM is going up to closely to the 1 terabyte. I think I was quite happy. And then it really runs so big, so it's if you make it too big, then it just stops, and you wait long, and then you're angry. And the colleagues are also angry because we use the computer, and so it's nice that it works. And actually, so I had this formula, and I have a quite good relation to Don Sagier, and I told him, hey Don, I have a formula which contains the dimension of the modular forms to the square. And then he was so amazed, oh, where did this come from? Explain to me. And then I explained to him. And actually, in order to explain Don something, you really have to give formulas. You don't have to give theory, something else. You have to give him a formula, and then he's happy. And so I gave him the formula. I say, okay, so the kernel, so these relations corresponds to a set of polynomials. You see the set of polynomials here. And as Don is not here, I don't expect that anybody of you see this. He did use half of the night to find the structure of it. But you really can make it explicit. And now you can play with additional features, and the main additional feature is if you work with Q series or if you work with functions, you have a derivative. It's like in number theory, you can't derive numbers. So you get something that is not really good. But now here you have the advantage that you have this additional structure, and it's really using in the proof that you have this Q derivative, or you have this other thing. And so you could use now here this symplectic Laplacian, and then you reformulate your problem, and now it looks much neater, so it really looks like a four-variable version of primitive polynomials, and then the relations come as a kernel of the Laplacian and the image of this little delta, and then playing a little bit, you find that the kernel is expressed by tensor products of primitive polynomials, which are either plus plus or minus minus. And now you can really calculate the number of these period polynomials, and you get that the dimension of this kernel is just the dimension of the modular forms to the square. And therefore you prove that the relations in this Lie algebra really comes with the number of modular forms to the square. And so we can conclude. No, it's even furthermore. Actually, we have two kind of relations. So we have a kind of orthogonality relation, and this orthogonality relation corresponds to the period polynomial of the isostances in the sense that the element corresponding to 1 is orthogonal to the image that comes from multiple zeta values. And also we had the image of all these period polynomial relations and some kind of new period polynomial relations. And now it turns out that this relation become the same because of the Jacobi identity. So we just have that these relations, if you multiply it with the next element, it will be contained in the other. So this is somehow, that means we have relations in the relations, so this gives us some homology. And so we see that that the number of these relations in the relations are just given by this power series A3. And also this orthogonality relations we have in depth 5, this gives you this generating series with A5. So a priori, except of A4, everything should be fine. And of course A4 would be the correct one if this generalization of the Hara conjecture would be true. And so let's put everything together. It's like we had seen a lot of formula, maybe too much for most of you. So the first part was we introduced this multiple Q zeta values as a kind of natural generalization of multiple zeta values. And we've seen that this huge space is spanned by these B brackets. And these B brackets contain quasi-modular forms and so on. We've seen dimensionless conjectures for this space of these multiple Q zeta values. And we've seen some structural conjectures for these. And then we have seen that using the dimorphism properties of these multiple Q-zeta values, we were getting functional equations of these B brackets. And this gives us Lie algebras in the context of alternal, in the context of Eckhall. Language of polynomial B modes. And now we have two objects. And we've seen that experimentally the dimensions fit together, and part of these conjectures can even be proved. And what is missing, it's what Anton was asking at the beginning. It's like, what is the geometry behind? And I'm really seeking for the geometry, and that's somehow the other aspect why I'm here, because I would love to see the geometry behind, because I really believe that these structures are so beautiful that they are not coming by random, but I don't know why. And that's all for today. Thank you.
Any questions?
So maybe I didn't follow in the end. So you explained that the depth 2 is more or less completely controlled, right?
Yeah.
And then depth 3?
We cannot rule out that there might be more relations. I think one could do a little bit more. It's like in multiple zeta, steps 2 and 3 are quite well understood. And so it is not that you can mimic the proof easily, as you have for multiple zetas. And in depth 3, you have two approaches. So one is using a dupe theory by Okiai, and another one is by Goncharov, but it's rather difficult to understand what he's doing. And both does not obviously generalize in this.
Okay, let's thank you once again.